Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest has a lot to say about the health crisis in his city, Newark. He's a board-certified emergency medicine physician who worked for years at Newark's Beth Israel Hospital, but could easily have ended up on the other end of the stethoscope. You might know Dr. Samson Davis from the book he wrote with his two friends called The Pact, about how they vowed together growing up in Newark to make it to college and become doctors and come back and help their city. And they all did become doctors. His new book, Living and Dying in Brick City, An ER Doctor Returns Home, is written with Lisa Fraser Page. Welcome to WNYC, Dr. Davis. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian, for having me.
And you managed to weave together your patients' stories with your own to shed some light on the health issues plaguing a place like Newark, and I'm told it's like if HBO's The Wire had done a season at a hospital. So tell us a little bit about Beth Israel and the people it serves.
Beth Israel is an inner city hospital. Actually, where I was born, in the same hospital that I eventually came to train in, practice in emergency medicine. But it's inner city hospital with a lot of struggles and issues. We see a lot of gun violence, high blood pressure. We also see a lot of preventative diseases that go unnoticed or undiagnosed until it's terminal stages and terminal points.
You write about diseases like high blood pressure and asthma, but also about guns. And I think you use the phrase macho posturing. So health crises are more than illness?
Mm-hmm. So with the macho posturing, what you see a lot of is a lot of young men who doesn't have the skill set, if you will, to resolve some of the conflicts that they experience. So instead of them, if there's an argument that ensues, instead of them saying, hey, you know, I apologize, my fault, it escalates, and it escalates in a violent way, and then a weapon is used. So I've seen too many young men and young women that come through the emergency department doors with gunshot wounds, and their life taken away prematurely before they should have been.
Your own story is amazing. You made this pact with your friends that I mentioned before, but almost ended up in prison yourself when you got involved in an armed robbery at age 17 and a half, and your precise age was significant, wasn't it?
Yeah, I often say as we get older, we lose those halves, and even as we get older, we lose that second number. We're just in our 40s and our 50s. But yeah, if, 17 and a half, I was going down the wrong road growing up in the city of Newark. And in a book, I talk about this armed robbery that took place with another young man that I was with. And that was a life-changing moment for me. And I realized if I stayed down the road of crime, that my life would be taken away as well. So I decided to straighten up, if you will, and I was granted a 2-year probation sentence, and I went back to high school and got all A's and made a pact with my two friends that became doctors. And when I came back to Newark to practice emergency medicine, I re-encountered my old friend. This time I saw his name on a trauma board during my rotation, and underneath his name, the words deceased was written. And I wasn't for sure it was him, because there was other people that could have had the same name. But when I ran down the hallway to the surgical ICU, his family was gathered outside the room. So his life was taken on the streets of Newark through gun violence.
But the idea that you were 17 and a half, you were still technically a minor, that enabled you to get probation more easily. And your life might have been entirely different if you had done this thing 6 months later.
Absolutely. I mean, if I was 18 years old, I wouldn't be sitting here.
In one of the first chapters, you talk about drug addicts, but not the drugs we most typically associate with inner cities like heroin or cocaine, but prescription drugs among sickle cell patients. Was that a surprise to you to find that?
It was. I mean, sickle cell disease is a horrible disease element to have, and you have these crises where your blood's sickle and the tissues are starved of oxygen, and you have pain crises, and you need often lots of fluids and narcotic medications to curb the pain. However, but the patient, once they're exposed to that medication, they sometimes become addicted to it. So I started to see a high increase with sickle cell patients per se. That was a need or had an addiction to the narcotic medications. But let me be clear, I'm not saying that all sickle cell patients has a prescription drug abuse habit. But
or that most do.
Right.
Certainly not.
Absolutely. But at the same time, there is an increase in prescription drug abuse that's taking place in our country that's paralleling, and the CDC calls it an epidemic crisis. And I touch on that in a book as far as how prescription drug abuse is becoming more common and more prevalent than street drug abuse.
What else do you see or did you see as an emergency room physician that might be news to most Americans?
I think there's a underdiagnosed situation occurring with mental illness and depression especially. I see a lot of young people who don't have an avenue to express their feelings and what they're going through. And then what we're seeing in the country is the end result of that. We're seeing the increase in gun shootings and violence that's taking place because there's really no avenue for a young person to express what they're going through. And especially, man, it's almost taboo, if you will, for a young man to tell another young man, I'm depressed. It's not cool within that inner circle. So I think we have to pretty much bring some attention to that and allow an avenue for a young person to express what they're going through and really sort of put a bullhorn to this and really blast it out there so that we can see what these young people are struggling with and help them out.
And sparked by the shooting in Newtown, the country is looking for solutions to gun violence, obviously. What would help the gun violence in Newark, in your opinion?
So, unfortunately, the gun violence is something that's always and for a long time existed in the inner cities, especially if you look at Chicago with over 500 murders due to gang and gun violence last year. I think education, one, removal of the guns, the illegal guns off the street. But education, as far as the macho posturing that we were talking about, is almost learned behavior. There's nothing inherent about growing up in the inner city that makes you feel like you got to grab a gun. But at the same time, if you put in poverty, if you put in hopelessness and despair, then guns become a resource where people look to for survival.
My guest on WNYC is Dr. Samson Davis. He's the author of Living and Dying in Brick City, an ER doctor returns home. I don't know if you're willing to answer any political questions, but what do you think about Cory Booker's record as mayor, especially as it pertains to violence?
I think Cory's on the forefront. He's really addressing the violent issues. He obviously, that was his platform when he first ran for mayor, that he was going to decrease crime, and he's been vigilant in bringing attention to it, not only citywide, but nationwide. So it is something that's dear to his campaign. Not only on a political level, but I think personally he's really invested in making sure that the gun violence and violence in general is decreasing in the inner cities.
Do you think he's had particular techniques that have worked in Newark that maybe some mayors have not known to use or just haven't used?
I don't know the details per se. I know he's done some measures which have been constructive and helpful. He's installed cameras throughout the city to sort of capture some of the violence that happens on the street. He increased police control in some of the more violent areas, so there's more police presence there as well. And then he has alarms, sound alarms, when there's a gunshot wound that, or a gunshot blast, rather, that takes place. The police is notified. So I think he's taken some creative measures, some effective, but there's still way too many murders taking place in the inner city.
How about Obamacare? Will that matter to Beth Israel Hospital in Newark?
So particularly for Beth Israel in Newark, that would be helpful because of the amount of uninsured patients. You're talking 45 million people without insurance. So for the communities in the rural areas and in the inner cities where the economy is below the poverty line, that would help as far as reimbursement and overall better care, because now you have some funds coming in to help take care of the patients. And not only take care of the patients, but to help the hospital survival. Part of the healthcare crisis that we experience is closures of hospitals, secondary to the economy crisis.
And I know you're a doctor, you don't work in the business office, but the state already spends like $1 billion on uninsured charity care that flows in, you know, in large measure to the hospitals. Do you have a sense of whether Obamacare, if more people actually had the insurance coming in, would make it easier on the hospitals to stay open, or is it just that the same money is coming from a different place?
I mean, that's a good question. I would feel that ultimately what would be the best answer, and it's hard for me to, it's difficult for me to say what would be the better way to approach it, but I think, you know, my hope even with this book is that patients themselves would have more skin in the game, that we all would be somewhat more aggressive and assertive in our own care. You know, I feel that sometimes when I'm in a hospital, patient come in and they're like, oh, I made it here, doc, and they just collapse and they want me to fix them. But I want, you know, all our patients to just really have more skin in the game and be more inept with taking care of their bodies and having more understanding of their high blood pressure, their diabetes. And that's what I want to see happen. I think that itself goes a lot further than whether it's Obamacare versus charity care.
You connect the confidence needed to insert a chest tube with that needed to win pickup basketball. Did your background dealing with gun violence and domestic violence and drug addiction yourself or in your family make a difference in how you practice medicine?
It does. I think I experienced all that. And what's unique with this project itself is that I tell a lot of patients' story and I share a lot of their details, but I don't shy away from sharing mine. I don't think it's fair for me to talk about other people's experience and not put mine in there. So I speak freely about my situation and growing up and having domestic violence in the home and guns and drugs and out of the home as well. So I think that itself helps me to have more compassion and understanding to what a patient may go through and what they're experiencing when they come into the hospital. And so I'm not as judgmental, and I feel that the part of having some compassion first goes along with that Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm, and it should be first have some compassion. And so I try to practice that first and really enforce that to really see what a patient is going through before judging the situation.
We only have 2 minutes left in the segment, so let me apologize to both you and the caller we're about to take for the brevity. But one of your listeners, Corey in Newark, is calling in.
Oh, wow.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Are you there, Mayor?
I'm here. Oh, let me turn off the radio.
And we just literally we have like 60 seconds left, so you're going to get a quick word in here, and we're glad you're listening. And do you know the doctor?
I do know the doctor. He's really a local hero. His story has inspired so many of our young people, and he's got his finger on the pulse of what is a challenge in Newark and, frankly, in all across America. And there are really health roots to a lot of the problems we see, from the prenatal issues, undiagnosed depression, and I'm just really happy that with his recent book, and I think it's going to make a big impact.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Booker.
There's a blurb for the next edition.
Thank you.
So what was the hardest part of taking that path away from crime and violence and winding up a doctor? And do you hope that this book gets to policymakers? We have 30 seconds.
I really do. I think the most difficult part is this changing the company you keep. Once I decided to change the people I was hanging out with and kept a more positive circle, then it wasn't that difficult at all. So I'm hopeful that this will make an impact and start a movement across the nation.
Dr. Sampson Davis is the author. Maybe you know his first book, The Pact, with his two friends, how they vowed growing up in Newark to make it to college and become doctors and did. His new book, Living and Dying in Brick City, An ER Doctor Returns Home, is written with Lisa Frazier Page. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.